batting lessons. Nice touch. I drew a steadying breath and told myself I'd imagined the words, because the alternative was considering that Patch held the power to channel thoughts into my mind, which couldn't be. It just couldn't. Unless I was delusional. That scared me more than the idea that he'd breached normal communication methods and could, at will, speak to me without ever opening his mouth. Gray, head in the game! I blinked, jerking to life just in time to see the ball rolling through the air toward me. I started to swing, then heard another trickle of words. Not yet. I held back, waiting for the ball to come to me. As it descended, I stepped toward the front of the plate. I swung with everything I had. A huge crack sounded, and the bat vibrated in my hands. The ball drove at Marcy, who fell flat on her backside. Squeezing between shortstop and second base, the ball bounced in the outfield grass. Run! My team shouted from the dugout. Run, Nora! I ran. Drop the bat! They screamed. I flung it aside. Stay on first base! I didn't. Stepping on a corner of first base, I rounded it, sprinting toward second. Left field had the ball now, in position to throw me out. I put my head down, pumped my arms, and tried to remember how the pros on ESPN slid into base. Feet first? Head first? Stop, drop, and roll? The ball sailed toward the second baseman, spinning white somewhere in my peripheral vision. An excited chant of the word, "Slide!" came from the dugout, but I still hadn't made up my mind which was hitting the dirt first, my shoes or my hands. The second baseman snagged the ball out of the air. I dove head first, arms outstretched. The glove came out of nowhere, swooping down on me. It collided with my face, smelling strongly of leather. My body crumpled on the dirt, leaving me with a mouthful of grit and sand dissolving under my tongue. "She's out!" cried Miss Sully. I tumbled sideways, surveying myself for injuries. My thighs burned a strange mix of hot and cold, and when I raised my sweats, to say it looked like two cats had been set free on my thighs would be an understatement. Limping to the dugout, I collapsed on the bench. "Cute," Elliot said. The stunt I pulled or my torn-up leg? Tucking my knee against my chest, I gently brushed as much of the dirt away as I could. Elliot bent sideways and blew on my knee. Several of the larger bits of dirt fell to the ground. A moment of awkward silence followed.
"Can you walk?" he asked.
Standing, I demonstrated that while my leg was a mess of scratches and dirt, I still had the use of it.
"I can take you to the nurse's office if you want. Get you bandaged," he said.
"Really, I'm fine." I glanced at the fence where I'd last seen Patch. He was no longer there.
"Was that your boyfriend standing by the fence?" Elliot asked.
I was surprised that Elliot had noticed Patch. He'd had his back to him. "No," I said. "Just a friend. Actually, not even that. He's my bio partner."
"You're blushing."
"Probably windburn." Patch's voice still echoed in my head. My heart pumped faster, but if anything, my blood ran colder. Had he talked directly to my thoughts? Was there some inexplicable link between us that allowed it to happen? Or was I losing my mind? Elliot didn't look fully convinced.
"You're sure nothing's going on between the two of you? I don't want to chase after an unavailable girl."
Nothing. Nothing I was going to allow, anyway. Wait. What did Elliot say? "Sorry," I said. He smiled.
"Delphic Seaport reopens Saturday night, and Jules and I are thinking about driving out. Weather's not supposed to be too bad. Maybe you and V want to come?"
I took a moment to think over his offer. I was pretty sure that if I turned Elliot down, V would kill me. Besides, going out with Elliot seemed like a good way to escape my uncomfortable attraction to Patch. "Sounds like a plan," I said. Chapter 7. It was Saturday night, and Dorothea and I were in the kitchen. She had just popped a casserole into the oven and was sizing up a list of tasks my mom had hanging from a magnet on the fridge.
"Your mother called. She won't arrive home until late Sunday night," Dorothea said as she scrubbed Ajax into our kitchen sink with a vigor that made my own elbow ache.
"She left a message on the machine. She wants you to give her a call.
You've been calling every night before bed?
I sat on a stool eating a buttered bagel. I'd just taken a huge bite, and now Dorothea was looking at me like she wanted an answer.
Mm-hmm,
I said, nodding.
A letter from school came today.
She flicked her chin at the stack of mail on the counter.
Maybe you know why?
I gave my best innocent shrug and said, no clue. But I had a pretty good idea what this was about. 12 months ago, I'd opened the front door to find the police on the doorstep. We have some bad news, they said. My dad's funeral was a week later. Every Monday afternoon since then, I'd shown up at my scheduled time slot with Dr. Hendrickson, school psychologist. I'd missed the last two sessions, and if I didn't make amends this week, I was going to get in trouble. Most likely the letter was a warning.
You have plans tonight? You and V have something up your sleeves? Maybe a movie here at the house?
Maybe. Honestly, Dorothy, I can clean the sink later. Come sit and have the other half of my bagel. Dorothea's gray bun was coming undone as she scrubbed.
I am going to a conference tomorrow, she said, in Portland. Dr. Melissa Sanchez will speak. She says you think your way to a sexier you. Hormones are powerful drugs. Unless we tell them what we want, they backfire. They work against us.
Dorothea turned, pointing the Ajax can at me for emphasis.
Now I wake in the morning and take red lipstick to my mirror. I am sexy, I write. Men want me. 65 is the new 25.
Do you think it's working? I asked, trying very hard not to smile.
It's working,
Dorothea said soberly. I licked butter off my fingers, stalling for a suitable response. So you're going to spend the weekend reinventing your sexy side?
Every woman needs to reinvent her sexy side. I like that. My daughter got implants. She says she did it for herself. But what woman gets boobs for herself? They are a burden. She got the boobs for a man. I hope you did not do stupid things for a boy, Nora.
She shook her finger at me. Trust me, Dorothy, there are no boys in my life. Okay, maybe there were two lurking on the fringe, circling from afar. But since I didn't know either very well, and one outright frightened me, it felt safer to close my eyes and pretend they weren't there.
This is a good thing and a bad thing, Dorothea said scoldingly. You find the wrong boy, you ask for trouble. You find the right boy, you find love.
Her voice softened reminiscently. When I was a little girl in Germany, I had to choose between two boys. One was a very wicked boy. The other was my Henry. We are happily married for 41 years. It was time to change the subject.
How's, your godson, Lionel?
Her eyes stretched.
You have a thing for little Lionel?
No.
I can work something out.
No, Dorothea, really. Thank you, but I'm really concentrating on my grades right now. I want to get into a top-tier college.
If in the future,
I'll let you know. I finished my bagel to the sounds of Dorothea's monotone chatter, interjecting a few nods or uh-huhs whenever she stopped talking long enough to wait for my response. I was preoccupied, debating whether or not I really wanted to meet Elliot tonight. At first, meeting up had seemed like a great idea. But the more I thought about it, the more doubt crept in. I'd only known Elliot a couple of days, for one, and I wasn't sure how my mom would feel about the arrangement, for another. It was getting late, and Delphic was at least a half-hour drive. More to the point, on weekends, Delphic had a reputation for being wild. The phone rang, and V's number showed on the caller ID.
Are we doing anything tonight?
She wanted to know. I opened my mouth, weighing my answer carefully. Once I told V about Elliot's offer, there was no turning back. V shrieked.
Oh, man! Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man! I just spilled nail polish on the sofa. Hang on, I'm gonna get some paper towels. Is nail polish water-soluble?
A moment later, she returned.
I think I ruined the sofa. We have to go out tonight. I don't want to be here when my latest work of accidental art is discovered.
Dorothea had moved down the hall to the powder room. I had no desire to spend the whole night listening to her grunt over the bathroom fixtures as she cleaned, so I made my decision.
How about Delphic Seaport? Elliot and Jules are going. They want to meet up. You buried the lead. Vital information here, Nora. I'll pick you up in 15. I was left listening to the dial tone. I went upstairs and pulled on a snug white cashmere sweater, dark jeans, and navy blue driving moccasins. I shaped the hair, framing my face around my finger, the way I'd learned to manage my natural curls, and voila, half-decent spirals. I stepped back from the mirror for a twice-over and called myself a cross between carefree and almost sexy. 15 minutes later, to the dot, V bounced the neon up the driveway and beeped the horn staccato style. It took me 10 minutes to make the drive between our houses, but I usually paid attention to the speed limit. V understood the word speed, but limit wasn't part of her vocabulary. I'm going to Delphic Seaport with V, I called to Dorothea. If my mom calls, would you mind relaying the message? Dorothea waddled out of the powder room. All the way to Delphic. This late? Have fun at your conference, I said, escaping out the door before she could protest or get my mom on the phone. V's blonde hair was pulled up in a high ponytail, big fat curls spilling down. Gold hoops dangled from her ears. Cherry red lipstick, black lengthening mascara. How do you do it? I asked. You had 5 minutes to get ready. Always prepared. V shot me a grin. I'm a Boy Scout's dream. She gave me a critical once-over. What? I said. We're meeting up with boys tonight. Last I checked, yes. Boys like girls who look like girls. I arched my eyebrows. And what do I look like? Like you stepped out of the shower and decided that alone was enough to pass as presentable. Don't get me wrong. The clothes are good. The hair is okay, but the rest... here. She reached inside her purse. Being the friend that I am, I'll loan you my lipstick. And my mascara. But only if you swear you don't have a contagious eye disease. I do not have an eye disease. Just covering my bases. I'll pass. V's mouth dropped, half playful, half serious. You'll feel naked without it. Sounds like just the kind of look you'd go for, I said. In all honesty, I had mixed feelings about going makeup-free. Not because I did feel a little bit naked, but because Patch had put the no-makeup suggestion in my mind. In an effort to make myself feel better, I told myself my dignity wasn't at stake. Neither was my pride. I'd been given a suggestion, and I was open-minded enough to try it. What I didn't want to acknowledge was I'd specifically chosen a night I knew I wouldn't see Patch to test it out. A half hour later, V drove under the gates to Delphic Seaport. We were forced to park at the farthest end of the lot due to heavy opening weekend traffic. Nestled right on the coast, Delphic is not known for its mild weather. A low wind had picked up, sweeping popcorn bags and candy wrappers around our ankles as V and I walked toward the ticket counter. The trees had long since lost their leaves, and the branches loomed over us like disjointed fingers. Delphic Seaport boomed all summer long with an amusement park, masquerades, fortune-telling booths, gypsy musicians, and a freak show. I could never be sure if the human deformities were real or an illusion. One adult, please, I told the woman at the ticket counter. She took my money and slid a wristband under the window. Then she smiled, exposing white plastic vampire teeth smudged red with lipstick. Have a good time, she said in a breathless voice. And don't forget to try our newly remodeled ride. She tapped her side of the glass, pointing to a stack of park maps and a flyer. I grabbed one of each on my way through the revolving gates. The flyer read, Delphic Amusement Park's newest sensation, the Archangel, remodeled and renovated. Fall from grace on this 100-foot vertical drop. V read the flyer over my shoulder. Her nails threatened to puncture the skin on my arm. We have to do it! She squealed. Last, I promised, hoping if we did all the other rides first, she'd forget about this one. I hadn't been afraid of heights for years, probably because I had conveniently avoided them. I wasn't sure I was ready just yet to find out if time had faded my fear of them. After we hit the Ferris wheel, the bumper cars, the magic carpet ride, and a few of the game booths, V and I decided it was time to look for Elliot and Jules. Hmm, said V, looking both ways down the path looping the park. We shared a thoughtful silence. The arcade, I said at last. Good call. We had just walked through the doors to the arcade when I saw him. Not Elliot. Not Jules. Patch. He glanced up from his video game. The same baseball cap he'd worn when I saw him during PE shielded most of his face, but I was certain I saw a flicker of a smile. At first glance, it appeared friendly, but then I remembered how he'd entered my thoughts, and I went cold to the bone. If I was lucky, V hadn't seen him. I edged her forward through the crowd, letting Patch fall out of sight. The last thing I needed was for her to suggest we go over and strike up a conversation. "There they are," V said, waving her arm over her head. "Jules! Elliot! Over here!"
"Good evening, ladies," Elliot said, making his way through the crowd.
Jules moved in his wake, looking about as enthusiastic as 3-day-old meatloaf.
"Can I buy you both a Coke?"
"Sounds good," said V. She was looking right at Jules. "I'll take a diet."
Jules muttered an excuse about needing to use the restroom and slipped back into the crowd. 5 minutes later, Elliot returned with Cokes. After splitting them between us, he rubbed his hands together and surveyed the floor.
"Where should we start?"
"What about Jules?" V asked.
"He'll find us."
"Air hockey," I said immediately. Air hockey was on the other side of the arcade. The farther away from Patch, the better. I told myself it was a coincidence he was here, but my instincts disagreed.
"Ooh, look," V interjected, "foosball."
She was already zigzagging her way toward an open table.
"Jules and me against the two of you. Losers buy pizza."
"Fair enough," said Elliot.
Foosball would have been fine had the table not been a short distance from where Patch stood playing his game. I told myself to ignore him. If I kept my back to him, I'd hardly notice he was there. Maybe V wouldn't notice him either.
"Hey, Nora, isn't that Patch?" V said.
"Hmm?" I said innocently. She pointed.
"Over there. That's him, isn't it?"
"I doubt it. Are Elliot and I the white team, then?"
"Patch is Nora's bio partner," V explained to Elliot.
She winked slyly at me, but made a face of innocence the moment Elliot gave her his attention. I shook my head subtly but firmly at her, transmitting a silent message. "Stop."
"He keeps looking this way," V said in a lowered voice.
She leaned across the foosball table, attempting to make her conversation with me appear private, but she whispered loud enough that Elliot had no choice but to overhear.
"He's bound to wonder what you're doing here with."
She bobbed her head at Elliot. I shut my eyes and envisioned banging my head against the wall.
"Patch has made it very clear he'd like to be more than biology partners with Nora," V continued. "Not that anyone can blame him."
"That's so," said Elliot, eyeing me with a look that said he wasn't surprised.
He'd suspected it all along. I noticed he took a step closer. V shot me a triumphant smile. "Thank me later," it said.
"It's not like that," I corrected. "It's twice as bad," V said. "Nora suspects he's stalking her. The police are on the brink of becoming involved."
"Should we play?" I said loudly. I dropped the foosball in the center of the table. Nobody noticed.
"Do you want me to talk to him?" Elliot asked me. "I'll explain we're not looking for trouble. I'll tell him you're here with me, and if he's got a problem, he can discuss it with me."
This was not the direction I wanted the conversation to go. At all.
"What happened to Jules?" I said. "He's been gone for a while."
"Yeah, maybe he fell in the toilet," said V.
"Let me talk to Patch,"
Elliot said. While I appreciated the concern, I did not like the idea of Elliot going head-to-head with Patch. Patch was an X-factor. Intangible, scary, and unknown. Who knew what he was capable of? Elliot was far too nice to be sent up against Patch.
"He doesn't scare me,"
Elliot said, as if to disprove my thoughts. Obviously, this was something Elliot and I disagreed on.
"Bad idea," I said. "Great idea," V said. "Otherwise, Patch might get violent. Remember last time?"
"Last time?" I mouthed at her. I had no idea why V was doing this. other than that she had a penchant for making everything as dramatic as possible. Her idea of drama was my idea of morbid humiliation.
No offense, but this guy sounds like a creep, said Elliot. Give me 2 minutes with him.
He started to walk over. No, I said, yanking on his sleeve to stop him. He, might get violent again. Let me handle this. I narrowed a look at V.
You sure? Elliot said. I'm more than happy to do it.
I think it's best coming from me. I wiped my palms on my jeans, and after taking a mostly steady breath, I started closing the distance between me and Patch, which was only the width of a few game consoles. I had no idea what I was going to say when I reached him. Hopefully, just a brief hello. Then I could go back and reassure Elliot and V that everything was under control. Patch was dressed in the usual. Black shirt, black jeans, and a thin silver necklace that flashed against his dark complexion. His sleeves were pushed up his forearms, and I could see his muscles working as he punched buttons. He was tall and lean and hard, and I wouldn't have been surprised if under his clothes he bore several scars, souvenirs from street fights and other reckless behavior. Not that I wanted a look under his clothes. When I got to Patch's console, I tapped a hand against the side of it to get his attention. In the calmest voice I could manage, I said, Pac-Man? Or is it Donkey Kong? In truth, it looked a little more violent and military. A slow grin spread over his face.
Baseball. Think maybe you could stand behind me and give me a few pointers?
Firebombs erupted on the screen, and screaming bodies sailed through the air. Obviously not baseball.
What's his name?
Patch asked, directing an almost imperceptible nod at the foosball table. Elliot. Listen, I have to keep this short. They're waiting.
Have I seen him before?
He's new, just transferred.
First week at school and he's already made friends. Lucky guy.
He slid me a look.
Could have a dark and dangerous side we know nothing about.
Seems to be my specialty. I waited for him to catch my meaning, but he only said,
Up for a game?
He tilted his head toward the back of the arcade. Through the crowd, I could just make out pool tables.
Nora! V called out. Get over here! Elliot is cramming defeat down my throat!
Can't, I told Patch.
If I win, he said, as if he had no intention of being refused, you'll tell Elliot something came up. You'll tell him you're no longer free tonight.
I couldn't help it. He was way too arrogant. And I said, And if I win? His eyes skimmed me, head to toe.
I don't think we have to worry.
Before I could stop myself, I punched his arm.
Careful, he said in a low voice. They might think we're flirting.
I felt like kicking myself, because that's exactly what we were doing. But it wasn't my fault, it was Patch's. In close contact with him, I experienced a confusing polarity of desires. Part of me wanted to run away from him screaming, Fire! A more reckless part was tempted to see how close I could get without combusting.
One game of pool, he tempted.
I'm here with someone else.
Head toward the pool tables. I'll take care of it.
I crossed my arms, hoping to look stern and a little exasperated. But at the same time, I had to bite my lip to keep from showing a slightly more positive reaction. What are you going to do? Fight Elliot?
If it comes to that.
I was almost sure he was joking. Almost.
A pool table just opened up. Go claim it.
I dare you. I stiffened. How did you do that? When he didn't immediately deny it, I felt a squeeze of panic. It was real. He knew exactly what he was doing. The palms of my hands touched with sweat. How did you do that? I repeated. He gave me a sly smile.
Do what?
Don't, I warned. Don't pretend you're not doing it. He leaned a shoulder against the console and gazed down at me.
Tell me what I'm supposed to be doing.
My thoughts.
What about them?
Cut it out, Patch. He glanced around theatrically.
You don't mean talking to your mind. You know how crazy that sounds, right?
Swallowing, I said in the calmest voice I could manage,
You scare me, and I'm not sure you're good for me.
I could change your mind.
Nora! V called over the din of voices and electronic beeps.
Meet me at the Archangel,
Patch said. I took a step back. No, I said on impulse. Patch came around behind me, and a chill shimmied up my spine.
I'll be waiting,
he said into my ear. Then he slipped out of the arcade. Chapter 8. I walked back to the foosball table in a cold daze. Elliot was bent over it, his face showing competitive concentration. V was shrieking and laughing. Jules was still missing. V looked up from the game.
Well, what happened? What did he say to you?
Nothing. I told him not to bother us. He left.
My voice sounded flat.
He didn't look mad when he left, Elliot said. Whatever you said, it must have worked.
Too bad, V said. I was hoping for some excitement.
Are we ready to play? Elliot asked. I'm getting hungry for some hard-won pizza.
Yeah, if Jules would ever come back, said V. I'm starting to think maybe he doesn't like us. He keeps disappearing. I'm starting to think it's a nonverbal cue.
You kidding me? He loves you guys, Elliot said with too much enthusiasm. He's just slow to warm up to strangers. I'll go find him. Don't go anywhere.
As soon as V and I were alone, I said, You know I'm going to kill you, right? V raised her palms and took a step back.
I was doing you a favor. Elliot is wild about you. After you left, I told him you have like 10 guys calling you every night. You should have seen his face. Barely contained jealousy. I groaned. It's the law of supply and demand, V said. Who would have thought economics would come in useful?
I looked to the arcade doors. I need something.
You need Elliot.
No, I need sugar. Lots of it. I need cotton candy.
What I needed was an eraser big enough to scrub away all evidence of Patch from my life. Particularly the mind speaking. I shuddered.
How was he doing it? And why me?
Unless I'd imagined it. Just like I'd imagined hitting someone with the neon.
I could use a little sugar myself, V said. I saw a vendor near the park entrance on our way in. I'll stay here so Jules and Elliot don't think we ran off, and you can get the cotton candy.
Outside, I backtracked to the entrance, but when I found the vendor selling cotton candy, I was distracted by a sight farther down the walkway. The Archangel rose up above the treetops. A snake of cars zipped over the lighted tracks and dove out of view. I wondered why Patch wanted to meet. I felt a jab in my stomach and probably should have taken it for an answer. But despite my best intentions, I found myself continuing down the walkway toward the Archangel. I stayed with the flow of foot traffic, keeping my eyes on the distant track of the Archangel looping through the sky. The wind had changed from chilly to icy, but that wasn't the reason I felt increasingly ill at ease. The feeling was back. That cold, heart-stopping feeling that someone was watching me. I stole a look to both sides. Nothing abnormal in my peripheral vision. I spun a full 180 degrees. A little ways back, standing in a small courtyard of trees, a hooded figure turned and disappeared into the darkness. With my heart beating faster, I bypassed a large group of pedestrians, putting distance between me and the clearing. Several strides farther on, I glanced back again. Nobody stood out as following me. When I faced forward again, I ran smack into someone.
Sorry,
I blurted, trying to regain my balance. Patch grinned down at me.
I'm hard to resist.
I blinked up at him. Leave me alone. I tried to sidestep him, but he caught me by the elbow.
What's wrong? You look ready to throw up.
You have that effect on me, I snapped. He laughed. I felt like kicking his shins.
You could use a drink.
He still had me by the elbow, and he tugged me toward a lemonade cart. I dug in my heels.
You want to help? Stay away from me. He brushed a curl off my face.
Love the hair. Love when it's out of control. It's like seeing a side of you that needs to come out more often.
I smoothed my hair furiously. As soon as I realized I looked like I was trying to make myself more presentable for him, I said, I have to go. V is waiting. A frazzled pause. I guess I'll see you in class on Monday.
Ride the Archangel with me.
I craned my neck, staring up at it. High-pitched screams echoed down as the cars thundered over the tracks.
Two people to a seat.
His smile changed to a slow, daring grin.
No.
No way.
If you keep running from me, you're never going to figure out what's really going on.
That comment right there should have sent me running, but it didn't. It was almost as if Patch knew exactly what to say to pique my curiosity. Exactly what to say at exactly the right moment. What is going on? I asked.
Only one way to find out.
I can't. I'm afraid of heights. Besides, V's waiting. Only, suddenly the thought of going up that high in the air didn't scare me. Not anymore. In an absurd way, knowing I'd be with Patch made me feel safe.
If you ride the whole way without screaming, I'll tell Coach to switch our seats.
I already tried. He won't budge.
I could be more convincing than you.
I took his comment as a personal insult. I don't scream, I said. Not for carnival rides. Not for you. In step with Patch, I made my way to the back of the line leading up to the Archangel. A rush of screams lifted, then faded, far above in the night sky.
I haven't seen you at Delphic before, Patch said.
You're here a lot? I made a mental note not to take any more weekend trips to Delphic.
I have a history with the place.
We edged up the line as the cars emptied and a new set of thrill-seekers boarded the ride. Let me guess, I said. You played hooky here instead of going to school last year. I was being sarcastic, but Patch said,
Answering that would mean shedding light on my past, and I'd like to keep it in the dark.
Why? What's wrong with your past?
I don't think now is a good time to talk about it. My past might frighten you.
Too late, I thought. He stepped closer and our arms met, a brushed connection that caused the hairs on my arm to rise.
The things I have to confess aren't the kind of things you tell your flippant bio partner, he said.
The frigid wind wrapped around me, and when I breathed in, it filled me with ice. But it didn't compare to the chill Patch's words sent through me. Patch jerked his chin up the ramp.
Looks like we're up.
I pushed through the revolving gate. By the time we made it to the boarding platform, the only empty cars were at the very front and the very back of the roller coaster. Patch headed toward the former. The roller coaster's construction didn't inspire my confidence, remodeled or not. It looked more than a century old and was made of wood that had spent a lot of time exposed to Maine's harsh elements. The artwork painted on the sides was even less inspiring. The car Patch chose had a grouping of four paintings. The first depicted a mob of horned demons ripping the wings off a screaming male angel. The next painting showed the wingless angel perched on a headstone, watching children play from a distance. In the third painting, the wingless angel stood close to the children, crooking a finger at one little green-eyed girl. In the final painting, the wingless angel drifted through the girl's body like a ghost. The girl's eyes were black, her smile was gone, and she'd sprouted horns like the demons from the first painting. A slivered moon hung above the paintings. I averted my eyes and assured myself it was the frigid air making my legs tremble. I slid into the car beside Patch. Your past wouldn't frighten me, I said, buckling my seatbelt across my lap. I'm guessing I'd be more appalled than anything.
Appalled, he repeated.
The tone of his voice led me to believe he'd accepted the accusation. Strange, since Patch never degraded himself. The cars rolled backward, then lurched forward. Not in a smooth way. We headed away from the platform, climbing steadily uphill. The smell of sweat, rust, and salt water blowing in from the sea filled the air. Patch sat close enough to smell. I caught the slightest trace of rich mint soap.
You look pale,
he said, leaning in to be heard above the clicking tracks. I felt pale, but did not admit it. At the crest of the hill, there was a moment's hesitation. I could see for miles, noting where the dark countryside blended with the sparkle of the suburbs and gradually became the grid of Portland's lights. The wind held its breath, allowing the damp air to settle on my skin. Without meaning to, I stole a look at Patch. I found a measure of consolation in having him at my side. Then he flashed a grin.
Scared, Angel?
I clenched the metal bar drilled into the front of the car as I felt my weight tip forward. A shaky laugh slipped out of me. Our car flew demonically fast, my hair flapping out behind me. Swerving to the left, then to the right, we clattered over the tracks. Inside, I felt my organs float and fall in response to the ride. I looked down, trying to concentrate on something not moving. It was then that I noticed my seatbelt had come undone. I tried to shout at Patch, but my voice was swallowed up in the rush of air. I felt my stomach go hollow, and I let go of the metal bar with one hand, trying to secure the seatbelt around my waist with the other. The car lunged to the left. I slammed shoulders with Patch, pressing against him so hard it hurt. The car soared up, and I felt it lift from the tracks, not fully riveted to them. We were plunging. The flashing lights along the tracks blinded me. I couldn't see which way the track turned at the end of the dive. It was too late. The car swerved to the right. I felt a jolt of panic, and then it happened. My left shoulder slammed against the car door. It flung open, and I was ripped out of the car while the roller coaster sped off without me. I rolled onto the tracks and grappled for something to anchor myself. My hands found nothing, and I tumbled over the edge, plunging straight down through the black air. The ground rushed up at me, and I opened my mouth to scream. The next thing I knew, the ride screeched to a stop at the unloading platform. My arms hurt from how tightly Patch held me.
"Now that's what I call a scream," he said, grinning at me.
In a daze, I watched him place a hand over his ear as if my scream still echoed there. Not at all certain what had just happened, I stared at the place on his arm where my nails had left semicircles tattooed on his skin. Then my eyes moved to my seatbelt. It was secured around my waist. "My seatbelt," I began. "I thought..."
"Thought what?"
Patch asked, sounding genuinely interested.
"I thought I flew out of the car. I literally thought I was going to die."
"I think that's the point."
At my sides, my arms trembled. My knees wobbled slightly under the weight of my body.
"Guess we're stuck as partners," said Patch.
I suspected a small degree of victory in his voice. I was too stunned to argue. "The Archangel," I murmured, looking back over my shoulder at the ride, which had started its next ascent.
"It means high-ranking angel."
There was a definite smugness to his voice.
"The higher up, the harder the fall."
I started to open my mouth, meaning to say again how I was sure I'd left the car for a moment, and forces beyond my ability to explain had put me safely back behind my seatbelt. Instead, I said, "I think I'm more of a guardian angel girl." Patch smirked again. Guiding me down the walk, he said,
"I'll take you back to the arcade."
Chapter 9. I cut through the crowd inside the arcade, passing the concession counter and restrooms. When the foosball tables came into view, V wasn't at any of them. Neither were Elliot or Jules.
"Looks like they left," Patch said.
His eyes might have held a sliver of amusement. Then again, with Patch, it could just as easily have been something entirely different.
"Looks like you need a ride."
"V wouldn't leave me," I said, standing on my tiptoes to see over the top of the crowd. "They're probably playing table tennis." I edged sideways through the crowd, while Patch followed behind, tipping back a can of soda he'd bought on our way in. He'd offered to buy me one, but in my current state, I wasn't sure I could hold it down. There was no trace of V or Elliot at table tennis.
"Maybe they're at the pinball machines," Patch suggested.
He was definitely making fun of me. I felt myself go a little red in the face. Where was V? Patch held out his soda.
"Sure you don't want a drink?"
I looked from the can to Patch.
Just because my blood warmed at the thought of putting my mouth where his had been didn't mean I had to tell him. I dug through my purse and pulled out my cell. The screen on my phone was black and refused to turn on. I didn't understand how the battery could be dead when I charged it right before I left. I pushed the on button again and again, but nothing happened. Patch said, "My offer's still on the table." I thought I'd be safer hitching a ride from a stranger. I was still shaken over what had happened on the Archangel, and no matter how many times I tried to flush it out, the image of falling repeated through my head. I was falling, and then the ride was over. Just like that. It was the most terrifying thing I'd ever been through. Almost as terrifying, I was the only one who'd seemed to notice. Not even Patch, who'd been right beside me. I smacked my palm to my forehead. Her car! She's probably waiting for me in the parking lot. 30 minutes later, I'd canvassed the entire lot. The neon was gone. I couldn't believe V had left without me. Maybe there'd been an emergency. I had no way of knowing, since I couldn't check the messages on my cell. I tried to hold my emotions in check. But if she had left me, I had an ample amount of anger simmering under the surface, ready to spill out.
"Out of options yet?" asked Patch.
I bit my lip, pondering my other options. I had no other options. Unfortunately, I wasn't sure I was ready to take Patch up on his offer. On an ordinary day, he exuded danger. Tonight, there was a potent mix of danger, threat, and mystery all thrown together. Finally, I blew out a sigh and prayed I wasn't about to make a mistake. "You'll take me straight home," I said. It sounded more like a question than an order.
"If that's what you want."
I was about to ask Patch if he'd noticed anything strange on the Archangel when I stopped myself. I was too scared to ask. What if I hadn't fallen? What if I'd imagined the whole thing? What if I was seeing things that weren't really happening? First the guy in the ski mask, now this. I was pretty sure Patch's mind speaking was real, but everything else? Not so sure. Patch walked a few parking spaces over. A shiny black motorcycle rested on its kickstand. He swung on and tipped his head at the seat behind him.
"Hop on."
"Wow, nice bike," I said, which was a lie. It looked like a glossy black death trap. I had never been on a motorcycle in my life, ever. I wasn't sure I wanted to change that tonight. "I like the feel of the wind on my face," I continued, hoping my bravado masked my terror of moving at speeds upward of 65 miles an hour with nothing standing between me and the road. There was one helmet, black with a tinted visor, and he held it out for me. Taking it, I swung my leg over the bike and realized how insecure I felt with nothing but a narrow strip of seat beneath me. I slid the helmet over my curls and strapped it under my chin. "Is it hard to drive?" I asked. What I really meant was, is it safe?
"No,"
Patch said, answering both my spoken and unspoken questions. He laughed softly.
"You're tense. Relax."
When he pulled out of the parking space, the explosion of movement startled me. I'd been holding onto his shirt with just enough of the fabric between my fingers to keep my balance. Now I wrapped my arms around him in a backward bear hug. Patch accelerated onto the highway, and my thighs squeezed around him. I hoped I was the only one who noticed. When we reached my house, Patch eased the bike up the fog-drenched driveway, killed the engine, and swung off. I removed my helmet, balancing it carefully on the seat in front of me, and opened my mouth to say something along the lines of, "Thanks for the ride, I'll see you on Monday." The words dissolved as Patch crossed the driveway and headed up the porch steps. I couldn't begin to speculate what he was doing. Walking me to the door? Highly improbable. Then, what? I climbed the porch after him and found him at the door. I watched, divided between confusion and escalating concern, as he drew a set of familiar keys from his pocket and inserted my house key into the bolt. I lowered my handbag down my shoulder and unzipped the compartment where I stored my keys. They weren't inside. "Give me back my keys," I said, disconcerted at not knowing how my keys had come into his possession.
"You dropped them in the arcade when you were hunting for your cell," he said.
"I don't care where I dropped them. Give them back."
Patch held up his hands, claiming innocence, and backed away from the door. He leaned one shoulder against the bricks and watched me step up to the lock. I attempted to turn the key. It wouldn't budge. "You jammed it," I said, rattling the key. I dropped back a step. "Go ahead, try it. It's stuck." With a sharp click, he turned the key. Hand poised on the handle, he arched his eyebrows as if to say, "May I?" I swallowed, burying a surge of mutual fascination and disquiet. "Go ahead. You're not going to walk in on anyone. I'm home alone." "The whole night?" Immediately, I realized it might not have been the smartest thing to say. "Dorothea will be coming soon." That was a lie. Dorothea was long gone. It was close to midnight.
"Dorothea?"
"Our housekeeper. She's old, but strong. Very strong." I tried to squeeze past him, unsuccessfully.
"Sounds frightening,"
he said, retrieving the key from the lock. He held it out for me. "She can clean a toilet inside and out in under a minute. More like terrifying." Taking the key, I edged around him. I fully intended to shut the door between us, but as I turned about, Patch filled the doorway, his arms braced on either side of the frame.
"You're not going to invite me in?"
he asked. I blinked. "Invite him in? To my house? With no one else home?" Patch said,
"It's late."
His eyes followed mine closely, reflecting a wayward glint.
"You must be hungry."
"No. Yes. I mean, yes, but..." Suddenly, he was inside. I took three steps back. He nudged the door closed with his foot.
"You like Mexican?"
he asked. I'd like to know what you're doing inside my house."
"Tacos?"
"Tacos?" I echoed. This seemed to amuse him.
"Tomatoes, lettuce, cheese."
"I know what a taco is." Before I could stop him, he strode past me into the house. At the end of the hall, he steered left, to the kitchen. He went to the sink and ran the tap while scrubbing soap halfway up his arms. Apparently having made himself at home, he went to the pantry first, then browsed the fridge, bringing out items here and there. Salsa, cheese, lettuce, a tomato. Then he dug through the drawers and found a knife. I suspect I was halfway to panicking at the image of Patch holding a knife when something else caught my eye. I took two steps forward and squinted at my reflection in one of the skillets hanging from the pot rack. My hair. It looked like a giant tumbleweed had rolled on top of my head. I clapped a hand to my mouth. Patch smiled.
"You come by your red hair naturally?"
I stared at him. "I don't have red hair."
"I hate to break it to you, but it's red. I could light it on fire and it wouldn't turn any redder."
"It's brown." So maybe I had the teeniest, tiniest, most infinitesimal amount of auburn in my hair. I was still a brunette. "It's the lighting," I said.
"Yeah, maybe it's the light bulbs."
His smile brought up both sides of his mouth and a dimple surfaced. "I'll be right back," I said, hurrying out of the kitchen. I went upstairs and coaxed my hair into a ponytail. With that out of the way, I pulled my thoughts together. I wasn't entirely comfortable with the idea of Patch roaming freely through my house, armed with a knife. And my mom would kill me if she found out I'd invited Patch inside when Dorothea wasn't here. "Can I take a rain check?" I asked upon finding him still hard at work in the kitchen 2 minutes later. I placed a hand on my stomach, signaling that it was bothering me. "Queasy," I said. "I think it was the ride home." He paused in his chopping and looked up.
"I'm almost finished."
I noticed he'd exchanged knives for a bigger and sharper blade. As if he had a window to my thoughts, he held up the knife, examining it. The blade gleamed in the light. My stomach clenched. "Put the knife down," I instructed quietly. Patch looked from me to the knife and back again. After a minute, he laid it down in front of him.
"I'm not going to hurt you, Nora."
"That's reassuring," I managed to say, but my throat was tight and dry. He spun the knife, handle pointing toward me.
"Come here. I'll teach you how to make tacos."
I didn't move. There was a glint to his eye that made me think I should be frightened of him. And I was. But that fright was equal part allure.
There was something extremely unsettling about being near him. In his presence, I didn't trust myself.
How about a deal?
His face was bent down, shadowed, and he looked up at me through his lashes. The effect was an impression of trustworthiness.
Help me make tacos, and I'll answer a few of your questions.
My questions?
I think you know what I mean.
I knew exactly what he meant. He was giving me a glimpse into his private world, a world where he could speak to my mind. Again, he knew exactly what to say, at exactly the right moment. Without a word, I moved beside him. He slid the cutting board in front of me.
First,
he said, coming behind me and placing his hands on the counter just outside of mine.
Choose your tomato.
He dipped his head so his mouth was at my ear. His breath was warm, tickling my skin.
Good. Now pick up the knife.
Does the chef always stand this close? I asked, not sure if I liked or feared the flutter his closeness caused inside me.
When he's revealing culinary secrets, yes. Hold the knife like you mean it.
I am.
Good.
Stepping back, he gave me a thorough twice over, seemingly scrutinizing any imperfections. His eyes shifted up and down, here and there. For one unnerving moment, I thought I saw a secret smile of approval.
Cooking isn't taught, Patch said. It's inherent. Either you've got it or you don't. Like chemistry. You think you're ready for chemistry?
I pressed the knife down through the tomato. It split in two, each half rocking gently on the cutting board. You tell me. Am I ready for chemistry? Patch made a deep sound I couldn't decipher and grinned. After dinner, Patch carried our plates to the sink.
I'll wash you dry.
Hunting through the drawers to the side of the sink, he found a dish towel and slung it playfully at me. I'm ready to ask you those questions, I said, starting with that night at the library. Did you follow me? I trailed off. Patch leaned lazily against the counter. Dark hair flipped out from under his ball cap. A smile tugged at his mouth. My thoughts dissolved, and just like that, a new thought broke the surface of my mind. I wanted to kiss him. Right now. Patch arched his eyebrows.
What?
Nothing. Nothing at all. You wash, I'll dry. It didn't take long to finish the dishes, and when we had, we found ourselves cramped in the space near the sink. Patch moved to take the dish towel from me, and our bodies touched. Neither of us moved, holding to the fragile link that welded us together. I stepped back first.
Scared? He murmured.
No.
Liar.
My pulse edged up a degree. I'm not scared of you.
No?
I spoke without thinking. Maybe it's just that I'm scared of... I cursed myself for even beginning the sentence. What was I supposed to say now? I was not about to admit to Patch that everything about him frightened me. It would be giving him permission to provoke me further. Maybe it's just that I'm scared of...
Liking me?
Relieved that I didn't have to finish my own sentence, I automatically answered, yes. I realized too late what I'd confessed. I mean, no. Definitely no. That is not what I was trying to say. Patch laughed softly. The truth is, part of me is definitely not comfortable around you, I said.
But?
I gripped the counter behind me for support. But at the same time, I feel a scary attraction to you. Patch grinned. You are way too cocky, I said, using my hand to push him back a step. He trapped my hand against his chest and yanked my sleeve down past my wrist, covering my hand with it. Just as quickly, he did the same thing with the other sleeve. He held my shirt by the cuffs, my hands captured, my mouth opened in protest. Reeling me closer, he didn't stop until I was directly in front of him. Suddenly, he lifted me onto the counter. My face was level with his. He fixed me with a dark, inviting smile. And that's when I realized this moment had been dancing around the edge of my fantasies for several days now. Take off your hat, I said, the words tumbling out before I could stop them. He slid it around, the brim facing backward. I scooted to the edge of the counter, my legs dangling, one on either side of him. Something inside of me was telling me to stop, but I swept that voice to the far back of my mind. He spread his hands on the counter, just outside my hips. Tilting his head to one side, he moved closer. His scent, which was all damp, dark earth, overwhelmed me. I inhaled two sharp breaths. No, this wasn't right. Not this, not with Patch. He was frightening. In a good way, yes. But also in a bad way. A very bad way. You should go, I breathed. You should definitely go.
Go here?
His mouth was on my shoulder.
Or here?
It moved up my neck. My brain couldn't process one logical thought. Patch's mouth was roaming north, up over my jaw, gently sucking at my skin. My legs are falling asleep, I blurted. It wasn't a total lie. I was experiencing tingling sensations all through my body, legs included.
I could solve that.
Patch's hands closed on my hips. Suddenly, my cell phone rang. I jumped at the sound of it and fumbled it out of my pocket. Hi, sweetheart, my mom said cheerfully. Can I call you back? Sure, what's going on? I shut the phone. You need to leave, I told Patch. Right now. He slid his baseball cap back around. His mouth was the only feature I could see beneath it, and it curved in a mischievous smile.
You're not wearing makeup.
I must have forgotten it.
Sweet dreams tonight.
Sure, no problem. What did he said?
About that party tomorrow night.
I'll think about it, I managed to say. Patch tucked a piece of paper inside my pocket, his touch sending hot sensations down my legs.
Here's the address. I'll be looking for you. Come alone.
A moment later, I heard the front door close behind him. A fiery blush worked its way up my face. Too close, I thought. There was nothing wrong with fire, as long as you didn't stand too close. Something to keep in mind. I leaned back against the cabinets, taking short, shallow breaths. Chapter 10. I was yanked awake by the sound of my phone ringing. Caught with one foot still in a dream, I tugged my pillow over my head and tried to block out the noise. But the phone rang and rang. The call went to voicemail. 5 seconds later, the ringing started up again. I reached an arm over the side of the bed, groped around until I found my jeans, and wiggled my cell out of the pocket.
Yes,
I said with a wide yawn, leaving my eyes shut. Someone was breathing angrily on the other end. What happened to you? What happened to bringing back cotton candy? And while you're at it, how about telling me where you are so I can come strangle you, bare-handed? I knocked the heel of my hand against my forehead a few times. I thought you'd been kidnapped, V went on. I thought you'd been abducted. I thought you were murdered. I tried to find the clock in the dark. I bumped a picture frame on the nightstand, and all the frames behind it played dominoes. I was sort of delayed, I said. By the time I made it back to the arcade, you were gone. Delayed? What kind of excuse is delayed? The red numbers on the clock swam into focus. It was just after 2 in the morning. I drove around the parking lot for an hour, V said. Elliot walked the park flashing the only photo I had of you on my cell phone. I tried your cell a zillion times. Hang on, are you at home? How did you get home? I rubbed the corners of my eyes. Patch. Stalker Patch? Well, I didn't have much of a choice, did I? I said tersely. You left without me. You sound worked up. Really worked up. No, that's not it. You sound agitated. Flustered. Aroused. I could feel her eyes widen.
He kissed you, didn't he?
No answer.
He did! I knew it! I've seen the way he looks at you. I knew this was coming. I saw it from a mile away.